For some women, one good man is not enough. A glamorous housewife hides a dirty secret.
What's wrong with me?
She was predatory in nature.
A young mom sees her husband's death as a ticket to the good life.
People describe her physical presence as being extremely cold.
And a serial bride isn't playing for keeps.
There's no reason to believe she ever would have stopped marrying wealthy men.
These deadly women turn on those who adore them. For the money, honey. ...1989, Ontario, Canada. First dates are never easy. Blind dates, the hardest of all. But when Gordon Stewart spies 53-year-old Melissa Shepherd, the sparks fly.
You look lovely, and the photograph doesn't lie.
Thank you.
She's dressed very classy, and she knows how to use her gender to her advantage.
The two meet through a lonely hearts column. But Melissa notices a wedding ring.
Oh, I'm not married. My wife recently passed away. I just can't bring myself to take the wedding ring off.
Melissa understands, as only a kindred spirit can.
I lost my husband, too.
The lonely old woman who just wants to meet someone else so that she can't be lonely.
1 year later at a Las Vegas wedding, the middle-aged lovers pledge their devotion. But the honeymoon period is brief. Gordon has doubts about his new bride.
His retirement savings, $50,000, was being suddenly drained from his bank account.
What's wrong with me?
Come back to bed.
But money worries soon take a back seat.
Oh, God, what's that?
To Gordon's health.
Hi, Melissa. Is Gordon in?
Well, he's,
Gordon!
Friends are worried.
What's wrong with him?
But Melissa doesn't share their concerns.
He's all right. He just needs bed rest.
No, he needs to see a doctor. I'm taking him to the hospital.
Melissa was successful at making men think that she loved them. What she loved was their checkbook.
Gordon recovers, but their marriage doesn't.
So what poison you got for me tonight, huh?
He now suspects Melissa of more than theft.
You've had enough.
Gordon snaps.
Get him! Ah! 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 Get him!
I think that it was probably a relationship in which they both provoked the worst in each other.
Gordon is convicted of assault and serves time. He's released on parole on the condition he stays away from his wife.
He wasn't supposed to have any contact with her, but she initiated it.
Melissa thinks they can work things out and organizes a nighttime drive.
I'm not meant to be near you. I shouldn't be drinking.
I feel safe enough.
This is something that Melissa is very good at. She uses her femininity to her advantage.
But Gordon isn't completely seduced.
A few things we've got to sort out. Where's my money?
Melissa decides to go for a walk. But Gordon follows.
Hey!
Melissa accused Gordon of raping her.
Melissa fights back with the only weapon she's got.
She runs over him not once, but twice with her car.
Melissa's tale of self-defense wins her sympathy, but there's no physical evidence to back up her claim of sexual assault.
An examination revealed no evidence of rape whatsoever.
And the autopsy on Gordon's body raises more questions.
Autopsy revealed his bloodstream was full of sedatives.
Rubbing alcohol, liquor, and a concoction of pills.
She was charged with manslaughter.
Melissa is sentenced to 6 years behind bars, but serves only two. When she's released, she finds a new lover, thanks to divine intervention.
She told him God wanted them to be together.
82-year-old Robert Friedrich is a retired engineer, living 1,600 miles away in Florida.
I rather doubt that God wanted a nice guy to be with a psychopathic killer, but that's what happened.
Within 1 month of meeting, the couple marries, but Robert is struck down by a mystery illness.
Time for your pills.
His family started noticing that he seemed to be ill a lot.
Oh, wait a minute. I had my pills already.
That was hours ago.
Husband number three becomes victim number two.
December of 2002, Robert Friedrich dies.
Melissa made sure that Robert was cremated very quickly.
No one suspects Melissa, and she inherits.
He's bequeathed all $100,000 worth of his assets to Melissa.
Soon, Melissa is once again on the prowl.
That was probably very exciting for her. The hunt is a big part of the thrill.
This is a dangerous woman.
With two dead husbands behind her, 69-year-old Canadian-born Melissa Shepherd is looking for a new man.
Melissa Shepherd was every man's worst nightmare.
This black widow snares her men on the World Wide Web.
On an online Christian dating website, she meets a 73-year-old man called Alexander Strategos.
Within 24 hours of meeting Melissa, Alex is sick.
Alex didn't even make it till morning. He had to be hospitalized. It would be the first of 8 hospitalizations in the brief time he knew Melissa.
Alex's concerned son starts asking questions. What he uncovers is troublesome.
They found unprescribed drugs in your bloodstream.
I don't understand.
In his father's bloodstream, there is Xanax and Valium, neither of which Alexander Strategos was prescribed.
But that's not all.
What have you got there?
His father's money was disappearing at a rapid rate.
Just some of Dad's papers. Very interesting reading.
Suspecting foul play, Alex's family goes to the police.
They do not have the medical evidence to charge Melissa with attempted murder. However, they do have enough evidence to charge her with fraud and theft.
In 2005, Melissa pleads guilty to fraud and is back inside a jail cell. But again, it's not for long. 4 years later, Melissa is paroled and deported back to Canada.
Considering the many years Melissa was involved in serious crimes, she got off pretty lucky.
3 years after her release, Melissa meets and marries 75-year-old widower Fred Weeks.
Fred, George.
Fred Weeks is a kind, kind-hearted man who was at an extremely vulnerable time in life. He was fair game for Melissa.
George, I can't tell you how happy I am that you agreed to officiate at today's ceremony.
It's a pleasure to be part of your big day, Fred.
It's another whirlwind romance. Fred has little time to get to know his new love.
Allow me to introduce my beautiful bride.
Hello.
How do you do?
But the justice of the peace, a friend of the groom, knows exactly who she is.
Melissa was notorious for her criminal activities in Canada. A documentary had been made about her. But Fred Weeks didn't know that. Fred Weeks was lonely.
The justice of the peace contacts the police.
I'd like to speak to the officer in charge. Name's Megan.
But they are powerless to act.
It must have been terrifying to watch his friend walk off with the notorious internet black widow.
Within days, Fred is gravely ill.
It was sudden.
But Melissa doesn't seem concerned.
You sure you don't want me to call an ambulance?
It's just seasickness from the ferry ride. He'll be fine.
Are you sure? Mm-hmm.
There's a coolness, almost a cold air about her.
The following morning, the new Mrs. Fred Weeks enjoys a leisurely breakfast. No mention of her sick husband.
How is everything?
Just divine.
After she was done, then she asked the proprietor if she would call an ambulance.
But you better call that ambulance for my husband. He's not well.
It's very cold and callous and uncaring.
Fred is admitted into a hospital. Melissa's behavior strikes the nursing staff as odd.
She said he had no children. They found out that was a lie. She said he had been prescribed sedatives. They found out that was a lie. And thankfully, they called the police.
Melissa is charged with attempted murder. But it's a charge that doesn't stick.
The concentration of those drugs in his system, it was not lethal.
Everybody knows that she's a bad apple, but she just seems to keep slipping the noose.
In 2013, Melissa Shepherd, now 78 years old, pleads guilty to administering a noxious substance and failing to provide the necessity of life. She is sentenced to 3.5 years in prison.
There's no reason to believe Melissa learned her lesson and will never try this again. So, watch out. She's gonna be released someday.
For some women, being loved,
I think Doug would put up with anything from Kelly.
Even worshipped.
She wanted all the attention that she could have.
Means nothing.
This was just simply Kelly wanting to be in control of other men.
Let me make it up to you.
1989, in Gwinnett County, Georgia. 21-year-old Kelly Brookshire reluctantly agrees to a blind date.
Trust me, Kelly, this one's different.
I don't know, they're all losers and abusers.
Not Doug. Brian, can you get that?
She was very protective, very closed off.
Beautiful.
Didn't trust people easily.
Then, 22-year-old Doug Gissendaner walks through the door.
Doug, this is my friend Kelly.
Nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you, too.
Kelly felt that Doug was someone who had this very steady life, something that she had never experienced.
Are you a mechanic?
I am a mechanic.
No way.
Kelly has a reputation as a party girl. She became pregnant in high school.
She married someone from school right after the baby was born, but it didn't last but about 6 months.
I think that's something you should know. I have a kid.
I love kids.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
Maybe this time, things will work out for Kelly. Within 2 months, the young lovers tie the knot.
And within a very short period of time, she was pregnant.
I always wanted to be a dad. Thanks to you, now I'm gonna have two kids.
You don't mind that he's not yours, do you?
No, of course not.
He loved the idea of being a father, a family man, a husband, all of it.
Their family adventure is just beginning. Doug joins the Army and gets an international posting.
They were stationed in Germany.
Gotta go.
Kelly loved being on a base of soldiers.
When her husband's away, Kelly reverts to her old ways. And the military base has a ready supply of men.
Kelly wanted all the attention that she could have.
Hey!
I'm sorry.
What's going on here?
Let me make it up to you.
She was so promiscuous with men on the base that she was asked to leave.
Kelly and the kids ended up getting sent back to the United States.
Doug completes his tour of duty and returns home in October 1991. He forgives his wife and they reunite.
Guess what? I'm pregnant.
But Kelly has not changed her spots.
But we haven't.
It's not yours. You're pathetic.
Well, as you can imagine, Doug was crestfallen that this would happen.
He just could not understand why this would happen to him.
Divorce is inevitable. But after 3 years alone, Doug is desperate to be with his family.
Whatever that feeling was that he had for her in the beginning sort of rekindled.
Hi, Kelly. It's me.
Picking up where they left off.
I love Christmas.
The couple remarries. And everyone's back under the same roof.
I think Doug would put up with anything from Kelly, much more than most men would, because he very much wanted to be a family man, a husband, and a provider.
But there's something Doug doesn't know.
I think that it was impossible for Kelly to be faithful to anybody.
After 3 years apart, Army veteran Doug Gissendaner is back with his ex-wife, Kelly.
Our first Christmas in our own home.
Always wanted my own home.
Doug purchases a house to please her.
Oh, I gotta go and get some provisions. I'll be back in an hour or so.
Oh, okay.
But there's something else Kelly wants for Christmas.
She was seeing her new boyfriend, Greg, in a hotel room. I think she went back with Doug only because he was able to buy a house. She wanted the house.
Are you ready for me yet?
Like many men before him, 25-year-old Greg Owen is enthralled by his adventurous lover. Greg could hardly know what he's in for.
We need to kill Doug.
Kelly brought up the subject of killing Doug in almost a joking way with Greg, and he didn't take her seriously.
Yeah, very funny.
No, I'm dead serious.
Kelly was only happy when she was taking advantage of people. She wanted what men could do for her, but she really didn't care about them.
Just divorce him.
You don't know Doug. He'll never leave us alone.
Kelly wanted Doug out of her life completely. She felt like this is the only way to do it.
Gotta go.
February 7th, 1997. Kelly pushes Greg into darkness.
She gave him the nightstick and the knife and took him to her house to wait.
Okay, the door's unlocked. Just don't turn any lights on.
Kelly left him there in a dark house. And she went off with three other girls to a party.
Kelly establishes her alibi, leaving Greg to do her bidding.
Don't make a sound. Now just get in your car, and no one will get hurt. Move!
Most people will do whatever they're told to do if they have a knife at their throat.
Get in the car! Get the fuck safe!
Okay, okay!
Doug went willingly, got into the driver's seat.
Drive!
And drove at Greg's direction to this very remote location.
Greg marched Doug up in the wooded area.
Keep going. Just stop there.
And there he told Doug to get down on his knees.
Get down on your knees. Shut up. Get down on your knees.
He must have been extremely frightened.
Please don't kill me. Please don't kill me.
And that's when he stabbed him to death.
Greg pages Kelly with the news.
do it?
Yeah, I did it.
Where is he?
He's back there.
I need to see the body.
Kelly had a need to see her husband's body. She wanted to see him to make sure he was dead, or perhaps to gloat.
Kelly destroys the evidence.
She had a bottle that was full of gasoline, and she threw it into Doug's car and set the car on fire.
After Kelly reports her husband missing, Detective Doug Davis is called in. A missing person report becomes a homicide investigation when her husband's body is found 11 days later.
I felt within my own inner being that Kelly was being untruthful about everything she spoke to me about. I found out she had had an affair with this guy named Greg.
Please don't kill me. Please don't kill me.
Greg Owen is tormented with guilt and confesses immediately.
Greg clearly was led by Kelly and feels manipulated and used.
Greg accepts a plea deal and testifies against his lover. He receives life in prison with a chance of parole after 25 years. Kelly Gissendaner maintains her innocence, but the court finds differently. In November 1998, she's convicted of malice murder and sentenced to death.
Kelly is exactly where she needs to be. She spends 23 hours a day alone in a cell. She doesn't need to be around other people.
I'm good.
Due to ongoing appeals, Kelly has yet to meet her end.
She's been waiting since 1998 for her sentence to be carried out.
A husband's love, devotion, and commitment aren't enough for Kelly Gissendaner. She wanted things her way, whatever the cost.
I don't think Kelly ever really loved Doug, but she didn't decide to kill him until he purchased a house. That's what she wanted, but she didn't want him in it.
For some women, marriage is a means to an end.
She was very skilled at getting men to marry her.
The only vow that's sacred,
she had an end game,
is till death do us part.
Her heart was dark.
...1971, Charlotte, Tennessee. 27-year-old factory worker Ada Evans is seeking love.
What are you reading?
My favorite column.
She's twice married and hoping for third time lucky.
Growing up, her parents were not wealthy.
I want a man to support me.
And I think Ada wanted nice things.
Someone like Bill.
Gentle-natured 43-year-old William Hayes catches Ada's eye.
He was an established gentleman, very handsome.
Ada is no classic beauty.
By the accounts of some that knew her, Ada was not an attractive woman.
But to William, she is a Southern belle.
She did something that attracted him to her and in a mesmerizing way.
When are you gonna make an honest woman out of me, Bill?
William is already married.
I'll tell her tonight.
He soon leaves his wife and children and sets up home with Ada.
What do you want?
Stay away from Bill. He's mine now.
How dare you? He's my husband.
I'm warning you.
Ada and Daddy got married fairly quickly, within 6 months of Daddy's divorce.
When William's daughter, Jeanette, 15 at the time, comes for the holidays, it's a happy home.
She was always smiling and easygoing.
Older brother Johnny Hayes also sees the love in his dad's eyes.
Watching my dad, he seemed to be happy and content with her.
But the Christmas cheer doesn't last. William falls ill.
Are you okay, Dad?
Jeanette is worried, but Ada is quick to console her.
It's a stomach ulcer. Let me get you some water.
Ada had prepared for him a glass of water, 2 tablets in it, and it would alleviate stomach issues.
Got this metallic taste.
Now?
All the time.
Have some water. It'll make you feel better.
Ada is an attentive wife.
She seemed to dote on him.
You'll be okay, honey. They're there.
But the soothing tonic does little to ease William's discomfort.
He was getting sicker and sicker.
William doesn't improve. For almost 2 years, he suffers.
Water?
Daddy began to lose a lot of weight. He couldn't hold food on his stomach. He was weak.
He got to a point where he couldn't walk.
And that was scary.
Doctors are baffled. But William believes he's dying from unnatural causes.
William suspected that he was being poisoned.
He took me by the hand and he looked me in the eyes and he said,
"Find out why I got sick. Don't let it happen to you or anyone else, okay?
I want you to find out why I died. You can save someone else's life."
But William's suspicions come too late.
So my father died.
I'd permanently lost an anchor that I could never get back.
Jeanette is determined to fulfill her father's dying wish.
I think there should be an autopsy.
Jeanette went to the authorities and told them what her father said, but they discounted her. No one believed her.
The pleas of a 15-year-old girl fall on deaf ears.
She's trying to tell everybody something's wrong, something's wrong, something's wrong, and nobody listens.
...1974, Charlotte, Tennessee. 30-year-old Ada grieves the death of her husband.
She was full of tears and sorrow that Daddy had died.
But for William Hayes' family, grief is fused with mystery.
There was no definitive diagnosis as to why he was sick.
He told his daughter, Jeanette, to find out why he died.
I think there should be an autopsy.
I did try to fulfill that request. I asked the authorities if they would do an autopsy.
But William's wife, Ada, refuses.
That's ridiculous. There's no need.
Richie wants her husband cremated.
He wanted to be cremated.
He didn't believe in it.
The family rose up and said, no, that's not going to happen. They're going to bury him.
I agreed to a burial, but no autopsy.
After the funeral, Ada moves on with all of her dead husband's assets.
None of the children got anything. No personal belongings, nothing when Daddy died.
She was a mean and selfish woman.
And lonely. She's looking to fix that through the Lonely Hearts ads.
Ada met John Wittenmeyer and moved to Oklahoma. Mr. Wittenmeyer was a wealthy rancher.
John Wittenmeyer would have been a prize catch for her.
Within 2 weeks of meeting, 59-year-old John becomes Ada's fourth husband.
Mr. Wittenmeyer's family did not trust Ada. They were concerned about her age. She was quite a bit younger than Mr. Wittenmeyer.
Hey, welcome home. How's the honeymoon?
Oh, the best.
Great.
I'll get these up for you.
Oh, thank you.
Ada and John share a house with his adult son, Charles. Before long, Ada reveals a tougher side.
Hey, any chance of a coffee?
Should have hired a maid instead of marrying me.
Ada, on the surface, seemed like a jolly person.
Are you okay?
In contrast,
I'm bored.
Ada was conniving.
Hey, look, I'll leave you two to it. you know I'm going away.
How long will you be going for?
I figure at least a week.
When stepson Charles goes on a business trip in 1979, Ada has her husband all to herself.
With Ada, nothing was quite what it seemed, what it appeared. To be bringing food, bringing sustenance, was in fact bringing death.
Are you okay?
No. I gotta lie down.
After he ate the pea soup, John became violently ill. He had horrible, crampy abdominal pain. And all the time, she watched him. And she didn't call for help. Ada enjoyed watching her victim suffer. That's sadistic.
When Ada tires of her sadistic game, she doesn't call the doctor. She goes shopping.
Honey, I'm home.
He died within 24 hours of being poisoned.
But before reporting John's death, Ada has some paperwork to do.
Mr. Wittenmeyer had a will that Ada forged and left everything to herself in that will, his ranch, his cars, everything, and left his children completely out of it.
So suspicious is John's death, this time an autopsy is performed.
His stomach still had the contents of the green pea soup, and that green pea soup was full of arsenic.
The results lead police to investigate the death of William Hayes.
My dad's body was exhumed. When they did an autopsy, they found arsenic.
His body was so full of arsenic, it was around the sealed vault, the casket, and the dirt.
The police want to talk to Ada, but she's vanished. They finally track her down in Canada, and she's not alone.
Once again, she hooked up with another man, this time in Canada, through Lonely Hearts Club. He also was very wealthy.
But before Ada can cash in, justice catches up. In 1982, she's convicted of the second-degree murder of John Wittenmeyer and the first-degree murder of William Hayes. She receives life.
There was no reaction in the woman. Her facial expression was one of, okay, next step. She still had a plan. She still had a plan.
6 days later, her plan becomes clear. Ada takes one more life. Her own.
She tied a bed sheet around her neck and jumped off her bed.
When I was told that Ada committed suicide, I thought, it's over. It's finished.
Today, all that remains of Ada's murderous spree are living victims, like Jeanette Harris, who for 40 years has shouldered the burden of two deaths. A father she loved, and a man she never knew.
It happened again, because I could not fulfill that request to find out why Dad died. Someone else did die.
There's no reason to believe Ada ever would have stopped marrying wealthy men, killing them, and then taking their stuff. It's what she did.
These deadly women lived a life of insatiable greed. Melissa Shepherd turned murder into a profitable career. Kelly Gissendaner wanted men more than her marriage. And Ada Wittenmeyer traded love for money. These women used and abused the men who adored them. And when the time was right, they killed for the money, honey. Love isn't only for the young.
What she loved was their checkbook.
Hello.
Cupid's arrow doesn't discriminate.
We see her looking specifically for lonely old men.
For better or worse.
She was cold, very cold and callous.
It's basically a dry cocktail. If a person has too much in their bloodstream, they may appear just as they would if they were drunk. Slurred speech, staggered gait, disorientation.
Melissa has no intention of cooperating with the police.
Very serious concerns in that she did attempt to kill her husband.
With authorities closing in, Melissa slips out.
We asked ourselves, why would you leave a loved one at the hospital if they were that sick?
Police fear they already know the answer to their question.
And that's when it came back that Melissa Shepherd was AKA, or better known as the Black Widow.
Serving in the army means Doug has to reluctantly leave his family.
You're always going away.
That's army life.
Well, things are different now.
I miss you and the kids already.
Almost from the beginning of their marriage, Kelly started cheating on Doug.
Word spreads around the base.
Doug was hearing that she was having parties while he was gone, that in fact that she might have even been involved with other men.
Kelly's behavior becomes so bad, it breaches the Army's moral code.
Kelly was brought before the commander and spoken to about what is acceptable behavior if you're an army wife, and hers certainly was not.
But Kelly won't stop, and officials are forced to act. Planting the seed of murder, Kelly convinces Greg that Doug must die.
He would have a house to live in, and he would have Kelly.
Greg is a person who has a conscience. He feels a great deal of remorse about what he has done.
She did not have any feelings towards what had happened. I think Kelly has no emotions whatsoever about it.
That night, Kelly sleeps peacefully, alone in her bed. The next day, she implements part two of her plan.
Hello, Pam? It's Kelly. You haven't seen or heard from Doug, have you?
Her story is that she took a sleeping pill, went to sleep, didn't wake up until 7 o'clock in the morning. And what that point was that she realized that Doug had never come home.
Okay, well, let me know if you hear anything.
And before long, he had told the story about the plan and subsequent murder.
I believe Ada was able to attract my dad by being able to say, I'm what you're looking for.
Ada was so skilled at manipulating men that she actually got William Hayes to leave his wife and child to be with her.
We didn't know anything.
For daughter Jeanette, the death is especially hard to bear. She's haunted by her father's dying wish.